Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
How are you doing this evening?
A little better. I see improvement every day. Today's been my
Good.
best day. I still can't go a full day, but at least I'm halfway there.
Okay. Did you have a good time with your guests this morning?
Yes, we've been studying and all day. So that's probably why I feel better. It's on something else.
That's always good.
Yes.
So we are in section 17, Pasuk 148 as we would be starting. Are you ready?
Oh, yes, I'm ready. Malka is on two.
All right.
And my guest is here too. So you have three of them for sure. I didn't hear Brandy,
Okay.
but I a minute or so late, so.
Understood. So we are in the Sulam commentary on the Zohar and Parashah Lech Lecha, with section 17. And we're starting with Pasuk 148. And I'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kud Shabarichu Ishkinte Bitzilur Himu Hilu Hilur Himu. Le'akda L'shem Yudhe Bavavhe B'Yichuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael. Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah. Umodain la milin kedivin uten azla tehai kegavna kol alya adit ar barnash utavat leat razachain inun tzadikayayo Dagale lon kucha barisu razin dileya behel ma bagin distamrun min dina uavili nun chayave ayalma tim savin garmaihu benafshichi The translation. And there among the klipot, they inform the nefesh about future events. And the nefesh cleaves on to them. Sometimes they scoff with the nefesh and tell it lies. Thus, in such a manner, it wanders all night until the person wakes up. Then the nefesh returns to its place in the body. Happy are the righteous that the Holy One, blessed be He, reveals His secrets to them in their dreams, so that they may protect themselves from judgment. Woe to those wicked people who defile themselves and their nephesh. My commentary. This is Pasuk as clear as written with Rabbi Ashlag's commentary. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Yes. I have a question. If the the nephesh is wandering all night until the person wakes up, and the nephesh comes back in the body, and then it says that happy are the righteous that the Holy One reveals His secrets to them in their dreams. Well, does that mean that if you've had a bad night and your soul didn't reach the upper garden because of the klipot, that Hashem then gives you a dream?
No.
It's something different?
No,
okay, separate.
The dreams are given when the nephesh is elevated to the higher level. The righteous people do not have to wander. They go straight up. They're not intimidated. They're not attacked by the klipot because they've not been given permission. Because during that day, the person is considered righteous. They've done only positive actions or primarily positive actions. So in the accounting of that day, it's considered that they're righteous and they elevate to the higher level where they are given information in a dream. We call it a dream, but it's really the way the communication takes place in the upper world telepathically, for lack of a better description.
Okay. I would have thought that would have been in a different paragraph, that it wouldn't have been with that particular paragraph about the soul wandering, hanging on to the klipot. It seemed like
it's an excellent statement. It's an excellent understanding. And it gives me an opportunity to teach something that I haven't really taught extensively with you. And that's if you notice, and most of us don't notice, but as you go through the Zohar, you get these situations where it's not logical that it's once one discussion is following another discussion. It seems like they break off and move to to something totally foreign, and then go back a little bit later to the same subject that you were on. And that happens in the Talmud as well, but it's less so in the Talmud and more so in the Zohar. And it's really it's done this way because Hashem knows a human being. And the human being, the unconscious, does not live in a literal world. It doesn't live in a rational world. The unconscious, which is where we need to make the changes, where the Hebrew letter, the energy of the Hebrew letters, needs to penetrate and make the changes, it's not in a rational way. It's not literal. It's not logical. Our minds jump from one thought to the next and then go back to our thoughts. This is the way our unconscious works. These are the pictures that we see in our unconscious. Then we transform those pictures into words, into logical approaches that we can communicate with other people that are based within the same culture and society that we are in. but the changes take place in the unconscious, and they can never be literal or logical. And so the Zohar is written in a way that Rabbi Ashlag took the Zohar in its original form, in its Aramaic form, that had no verses, no sections. And he created the sections. He created the verses. And through Ruach HaKodesh, through his intuition, he's saying that these two subjects are necessary to make the changes for most of the human beings that are going to be reading this. I hope that's clear.
It is. It's that I think the last few months I've seen so much in little bitty steps and big steps, the goodness of Hashem, and I think because we talked about how Hashem doesn't judge, I think we said that this morning, that it's the Beit Din and the Heavenly Court that do the judging. And
correct.
So it made me wonder if the Beit Din had judged us with mercy, and so Hashem, even though we had had a bad experience that night, that he, you know, maybe the next day or sometimes in the night, then he dropped the dream because it was soft judgment. So that was the reason I asked that.
I
just didn't express all of that.
Well, you triggered a thought that I wanted to. I've mentioned this before, but I think I once read you the email that I received from one of my students who was describing his experience vis-a-vis my own court that night, in a specific night that doesn't really matter what night, it's every night. And the way he described it in his email is that the Beit Din sits, and they are basically the souls of tzaddikim who are the most recent tzaddikim within your generation, and the most recent tzaddikim that relate to your generation, your soul within that generation. And there, the tzaddikim can be up to the, you know, 23 people. Generally speaking, it's just three people. But it's a court. But it's not a court that we're used to in our TV serials. The court is based on love. The court is based on a premise. They want to motivate your soul, our souls, to change as rapidly as possible and to achieve the highest spiritual level as possible and to complete their tikkun. So they go through the prosecutor, which is the Satan. He goes first and he outlines, here's what happened this day. Here's the overall frame of reference of what this soul is supposed to accomplish this year. And he presents a strict judgment approach without any mercy. What will motivate that this person, in my case, what he was describing was me, what would motivate my change the most direct way without leniency? But he can't do that without the judgment of the court. And then the defense attorney, so to speak, which is typically my own soul, but they ask for witnesses who will make suggestions to the Satan's course of approach, but also will bring merits and bring suggestions and good deeds that were done, so that the court will agree to inject mercy into the Satan's recommended approach. So the court, the Satan's approach is never with mercy or justice. The three human souls are looking for ways to inject mercy, because as human beings they understand how difficult a harsh decree is. Now, I have seen on the YouTube videos, and you can Google it on the, you know, do a search on the YouTube videos for people with past life experiences and for people with near-death experiences. And there are a number of Israelis that have put these videos out describing it. And this one Israeli man who was secular his whole life until he had this near-death experience. And he describes it as a very horrible experience, because he saw his whole life and exactly how, by being secular and not connecting at all to the mitzvot, how he was his next life was going to be so difficult, and that he would have to go to Gehinnom first. But they then called for people to come forward and give statements to ameliorate, to inject mercy into the decree. And he was waiting, and nobody stepped forward. And he was waiting, and nobody stepped forward. And he was just, he was shaking, is the way he described it. And then finally this woman came forward, and she said, this young man, this man, when he was a teenager, his father would come to visit his parents in the cemetery. And he and his brother would come, and they would clean off the stones of the dead people. They would pick the weeds out of the grass and so forth. And because of that one action that this one woman attested to in his Bet Din, he was allowed to return and come back from his near-death experience as a changed person, because he committed to become, to do mitzvot, and to, in his terms, become religious. But really it was to come back and do the mitzvot. And that's what he changed his life from that. Now, what a lot of people don't know from near-death experiences is that people do change. They don't come back with exactly the same components of their soul that they had when they died. But you can listen to probably 50 hours of videos if you're interested in that subject and what actually happens in the courts. But it is the human souls who are the judges who are injecting the mercy. The Satan always comes on a basis of strict judgment, cause and effect. you know, as an example, somebody said was speaking Lashana Ra, and in effect they killed somebody's reputation and caused them to have Parnasa problems because other people wouldn't continue to buy in their business or things like that. I'm just making this up.
Right.
I'm not making it up, but
yeah,
to give you an idea. And as this person, the strict judgment would be that they would need to have a lifetime where they would be the recipients of that gossip. And it would kill them and hurt their business. But the mercy that would be injected would be that they would not have to die and come back. They would get a little bit of this for maybe a month out of a year. And so a month out of every year, they would have a difficulty with their business and their parnasa. But over the 70, 80, 90 years of their life, it would total up to the effect of what happened to the person that they hurt. But it's a lot easier to take it in small doses. But the fastest process is to have the strict judgment and have it all at once. So this is where where we get the adage that God never gives somebody something that they cannot handle.
Mm-hmm.
But we experience all these ups and downs of life. What it is we're cleansing a little bit at a time. I thank you for those questions.
Oh, that was a good answer. Thank you.
We're out of time, so we just did the one verse with Baruch Hashem.
Okay. That's all right. It's a school.
It is a good school, good class. Yeah. Does anybody have any other questions they want to ask quickly? You all have a good evening, and the 7 o'clock West Coast time class, as we said, will be the mana tonight.
Okay. All right. Glad to be there. Okay. Thank you.
Shalom.
Okay, shalom.